Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Putting the Knicks in Phoenix Coyotes sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Did you feel good about that one?
Medium.
Yeah.
I know they're called the Arizona Coyotes, which was part of the problem.
The inaccuracy part of the problem. Just from a conceptual standpoint, putting the Knicks in Phoenix. I think you were trying too hard for NWS Cell, knowing how well that one performed with me. I think you were trying that. So, not high marks at all, but at least you're good on topic. I got to tell you, Novy, I got to tell you, I am absolutely shocked at the amount of interest and just coverage that is happening with the movement of this team. It's like, it's beyond anything I ever thought.
We appear to be on the verge of this thing being a done deal. You and our colleague Barry Bloom reported earlier this week that the NHL Executive Committee has signed off on a transaction for the Arizona Coyotes to be sold to Ryan Smith, the owner of the Utah Jazz, Real Salt Lake, and the Utah Royals. The price, $1.2 billion, Scott, which is potentially eye-opening. If you look at Sportico's valuations, we value the Coyotes at $650 million.
Just going to give Gary Bettman more ammunition to take shots at our valuations. That's Kay Bodenhausen on Twitter, if you're following
exactly.
him.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing of note that Sportico has reported as well, the logo, the marks of the Arizona Coyotes is staying in Arizona with the current owner, Alex Meruelo. So essentially, Ryan Smith getting the team and the operations, et cetera. But an interesting transaction, and one that we can take it any way you want, but closes the book on a business chapter that I think the NHL looking back would say
closes the chapter. Alex Meruelo will retain the Coyotes.
Sure. And we'll see if the Coyotes rejoin the NHL at some closes the chapter. For 28 years, Arizona had a hockey team, and it seems like, unless something crazy happens, it seems like next year it's not going to have a hockey team. That to me is a closing of something. Call it whatever you want. Book, chapter, page.
All right. Closing of, I'm turning the page. Turning the page on turning Arizona. Page. I'm not done with the chapter of hockey in Arizona, I don't think. But let's talk about, like, we think things we're hearing that we think are wrong out there that we should clear up.
Okay. Right?
That there's been some talk of the NHL is going to buy the team, you know, from Alex Meruelo and then sell it to Ryan Smith.
Yep.
We understand that. No. Like, the NHL is, you know, they're helping as middleman here. I get it. They're acting as sort of agent, but Ryan Smith is buying a new team, not the Coyotes. Is buying a new team from Alex Meruelo. That's what we understand.
Yep.
And two, I've seen a lot of talk. Thankfully, I have not seen any renderings. You know how much I hate renderings, which are really nothing more than public relations. It is never more than BS. We've heard a lot about a new arena. From what I understand, this will just be a reworked Delta Center that will incorporate hockey as well. Like, you get some immediate improvements, and then over some time, you know, where it's finally going to end up. But not a new arena, the Delta Center for both teams, because Ryan owns the Utah Jazz, and he now will own this hockey team. And you and I have said many times how multiple team companies or platform companies, and how do you, I know you love to talk about the synergies, particularly in the media world, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're in a world where RSNs are exploding. Well, you've got some leverage now when you've got multiple teams that you could say go to market with and say, hey, it's not just one. I've got winter covered. I've got summer covered. You know, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's
well, they don't have summer covered here.
Not the MLS does, right? So yeah, so they do right. have they've yeah. got games, they've got MLS games. And going back to the Delta Center for a second, I think a lot of people don't realize Delta Center has hosted hockey games before. There have been at least 5 NHL preseason games played there. There have been minor league contests as well. It's not as though it's a stadium or an arena that has never hosted hockey at all.
Yeah, unlike Barclays Center, where hockey just didn't work.
It just didn't. Yeah, not made for hockey and did not work. Smith bought the Jazz in 2020, Scott, for $1.66 billion. That looks like a better and better deal financially every day, given the way that those valuations have popped up. How do you think about if 1.22 becomes the number, obviously paying way more than what we value the Coyotes at? The expansion fee for the Golden Knights was $500 million. Mm-hmm. The expansion fee for the Kraken was $650. I saw this in a story that we published a while ago, but Gary Bettman told the Hockey News, if the NHL were to expand again, this is a quote, whether it's $2 billion, $2.5 billion, or $2.7 billion, I think that is the range I believe owners would want to be in if we were to consider expansion. Now, this is technically not expansion, right? He's buying a bunch of assets from Alex Meruelo. So there's a way to look
buying,
at this.
Well, let's talk exactly what he's buying. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. What is he buying? He's buying the players, and he's buying the front office hockey operations.
Yeah.
That's what he's buying, right? That is exactly what he's buying.
Yeah. And he's
buying enough to start a team for next year, which, by the way,
ain't easy. An active slot in the NHL, sure.
Yes, correct.
So 1.2, obviously, significantly smaller than the 2.5 or 2.7 that Gary Bettman mentioned for the Hockey News. I am kind of fascinated by the lens at which you can look at this and be like, wow, 1.2 is half the number that Gary Bettman was talking about a year ago. And another way where you can look at 1.2 and say it's essentially double what Sportico values the Coyotes at. And I get that in a different market, every team is worth a very different number, whether up or down, depending on where they're moving and what the situation is. The Coyotes have been playing in a 4,600 seat arena, which has obviously severely diminished their earning potential on live gate and things like that. But I do think the number being so right smack dab in the middle of those two figures is quite notable.
Yeah, I mean, when Kurt does his valuations, we have to explain to people all the time that we publish our methodology. That's one of the things that sets us apart. We tell you how we do this, and we include ancillary businesses such as real estate, such as RSN, stuff like that. So Kurt can look, you know, he talks to any number of people to get a good gauge of where things are. You can always get sort of like the national revenues and what do they do locally, and then these ancillary businesses, and come up with your number. What Kurt does not do is allow for hearts and minds and scarcity. Really, he doesn't do that. That those are things that push these prices up. There is no way to account for Matt Ishbia really, really wanting the Phoenix Suns, really wanting to get in the club, and an opportunity presented itself, and he was presented with an option. You could go with a lower number and find yourself in a bidding war and maybe lose out. Or, you know how it is, if you've ever purchased or gone to try and buy a home, and I mean, bidding wars are really annoying. So what do you see now? I know in my town, like my wife is telling me, hey, houses are going for X above ask and all that. Well, you got to come in at a really number and say, you know, blow it out of the water and say, I want it. Like, prove I want this thing. That's what Ishbia did. We do not account for that. But what it does do is set the bar for the next purchase that we can take into account a closed sale.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do here. If this thing closes at $1.2 billion, okay, that will absolutely bring all everybody else's valuations up.
There's another interesting aspect here about Ryan and the concentration of his sports assets. There are plenty of owners that own multiple teams in a city. I can't think of one that owned this many without any other professional rival in the city. Ted Leonsis has hockey and basketball in DC, but he doesn't own the football team and doesn't own the baseball team. Yep. Ryan is going to be in a position where he owns the NBA team, if this deal closes, the NHL team, the MLS team, the NWSL team, really the only major team not in that portfolio is BYU and University of Utah. It's a really interesting little case study and little concentric circles of business he's built, where not only are all of his sports assets here in one city, but there's no other sports assets there. That it is the Utah sports is owned by Ryan Smith, his wife Ashley, and SEG. And that I think is a really interesting. It's unique because I've been thinking for a little bit. I can't think of another owner that has that kind of a stranglehold on the professional teams in a certain city.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the beauty of this won't be a city. This is not going to be the Salt Lake. You know, I can guarantee you that. How about that? I'll guarantee it, Eben Novi Williams, just like it's the Utah Jazz. Why go for a smaller area when you can say, wrap your arms around the entire state and say, wear your team, like be fans of us. This is going to be the Utah whatevers. And I'm sure he'll, he already asked, like what a week ago he put out on Twitter, hey, if we were ever to get an NHL team, what would you name it?
Yeah.
But you know, he'll include the fans and he'll make a competition out of it. And they'll have some fun with it, a way to kind of drive interest in the club and figure out, you know, ways to incorporate new fans. But how about we don't have this in the ownership group yet. And that's another thing. Like, we understand that the folks who are already in, like, they're not going out to any new investors to come and be part of this. Like, this is going to be who you know is involved now. Those Ryan's partners now will be Ryan's partners in the hockey team. That's the way it's going to be. There's no new money coming in. But I would suggest, you mentioned BYU and Utah. Can we get Danny Ainge, Keith Van Horn, and Jim McMahon involved here? Is there any way to get – does anybody come to mind for you in those universities?
Oh, man. I mean, Utah,
Ty Detmer? Was he
there? No,
where
was Ty Detmer? Urban Meyer. I think of Urban Meyer with Utah.
I think of Ohio State. Really? Still going, like, after that, like, Urban Meyer, you still think Utah?
Yeah, he went from Utah to Florida to Ohio State. I think of Utah football. I think of Urban Meyer.
Where was Ty Detmer?
That's BYU, I think.
Right. Okay. Well, that counts. Yeah, yeah. I'm going BYU and Utah. That's good. All right. So I'm going to put Ty Detmer on my list. I'd like those guys to have like 0.0001% of the franchise just so they're on the cap table. Detmer, Van Horn, and McMahon.
One other thing I'll say on Smith. It's interesting to see the process by which this all unfolded, right? Not only has the situation in Arizona with repeated attempts to get an arena project off the ground. As those successively failed, I think the temperature on the Coyotes in Arizona got higher and higher. But Ryan very publicly in January made it clear that he wanted a team. I think that emboldened a lot of people in Utah. He, as you said, a few weeks ago put out a essentially a poll on his Twitter account about, hey, if we were to get an NHL team, what should we name it? I think he did a very good job of, and as he said in January, he's been talking to the league since at least October 2022, I think. I think he did a very good job of putting the right amount of public pressure on, which is to make it very clear across the country that we have the resources and the interest to bring a team here. And as the situation gets worse and worse in Arizona, what do you know, Gary? There's an option here if needed. So I think that's the strategy of how public to be about this and how realistic to be about it, I think is also a kind of an interesting wrinkle about the whole Coyotes to Utah piece.
It could certainly be a Harvard Business School case study because we haven't seen something like this. Like to make this transaction happen, like thank God if I'm Gary Bettman, I'm looking at Ryan Smith and going, thank God he's around. You know, let's take Ryan out of the equation. What are they doing? I'm sure there's a plan B and C. I just don't know what it was, but I'll ask Gary. I'd love to know what plan B and C was.
Yeah, I've certainly heard all the Atlanta's gotten a bit of attention in weird ways. I'm not convinced that.
Yeah, but here we have the arena. We have the pro sports infrastructure. You know, it's all up and ready. You have a guy with the cash, a group with the cash.
Ontario, Quebec. Obviously, they're not going out.
Did you see Larry Tannenbaum screaming bloody murder with another team in Ontario? Are you kidding me?
I'm just tossing out the friendly faces that get talked about in the league a lot. But when Atlanta moved to Winnipeg, whatever that was, 8, 10 years ago, that all came together very quickly also, right? This is that team moved in May or June even, I think. So it was even later than this, if memory serves me. So there is at least a precedent of the NHL very quickly announcing a new team in a new city that is going to start play the following year. But if this deal is to close and Utah were to get this team, it's going to be a rush, right? It's going to be a lot that has to get done in the next five months or so before this team starts playing games, official NHL games in Utah.
All right, who I said Quebec Nordique. Who would you say is your come to mind player? If I say Quebec Nordique, who comes to your mind? Oh, I love your big eyes.
Sakic, maybe. I don't know.
Joe Sakic, Quebec Nordique.
Really? Yeah, wasn't he on the Nordiques before they moved?
Before the Avalanche. All right, I'm Michel Goulet.
Okay.
Too old for you?
That's going, too old for me. I think. Too or old too for obscure. You? One of the two, but I don't know. No.
People like old time hockey fans, you know, like Eddie Shore. They would know Michel Goulet.
Well, here's a name people do know, Scott.
Caitlin Clark. Yeah. Hey, well done. Nice transition. You did well there.
Way less obscure. The Caitlin Clark machine keeps on rolling. On Monday, she was drafted first overall. No surprise to the Indiana Fever. Also not a surprise, the WNBA draft got its highest TV ratings ever. Almost two and a half million people.
Not a surprise that it got its highest draft numbers ever, but the number itself was a surprise to many, even folks who follow ratings very closely.
2.4 million people on average watched the draft. I did not watch any of it, no. Five times higher than the next closest. I think if you do look at the chart, it's very funny to see a lot of consistent numbers in the high 300,000s or low 400,000s. And then, oh, what do you know? A 2.4. But honestly, it looks a lot like a lot of the other charts that Caitlin Clark has been involved in, certainly from an attendance,
vertical,
and from
hockey stick.
Yeah. From an interest, from TV ratings, from ticket sales. And we're going to get into, I think in the next few months, the Caitlin Clark ticket machine, it's going to look, I think, a lot like Leo Messi, at least early in the WNBA season, where she's obviously selling a lot of tickets at home, but she is revolutionizing ticket sales and on the road when she travels. I already looked, I don't know if you have, but I looked at the two games that the Fever play here in New York against the Liberty in Brooklyn. Tickets for both of those games are already obviously significantly higher than they have been in the past, but maybe prohibitively expensive for the Novi Williams household. But yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more on this, but certainly Caitlin Clark continues to deliver and everyone else, right. And Cameron Brink and Camila Cardosa continue to deliver this fresh new faces as they transition from college to the pros.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this: for the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Amazing. If you had told me a year ago that the price point for entry of any WNBA game would be too prohibitive, and I know you're cheap and all that, but prohibitive for the Novi Williams household, I'd have been like, what are they giving away? It's got to be a twofer. Is it like a Nets and a WNBA and a circus? Exactly. Like, what are you missing? Like, what is the big event? And a concert?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. All right. I'm glad to see. But I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I know you'll have an answer for me. Do you have a Caitlin Clark jersey, Mr. Novi Williams?
good answer.
No.
I do not have a Caitlin Clark jersey.
Nobody has.
And if you lucked out and got one on Monday night, good for you. If you didn't, you're going to be waiting quite a while. The jerseys for sale on Fanatics, which operates the WNBA store, now come with a warning that they won't be shipped until August. That's 2/3 of the way through the WNBA season.
What month are we in right now?
Yeah,
in what world did we not know Caitlin Clark was going to be wild? And by the way, not only she was going to be wildly popular, we also know which team she was going to play for. We could have certainly gone to that team and guessed she was going to wear number 22. I don't know if anybody had it or not, but we're going to change all that. Caitlin Clark was going to wear 22 for the Indiana Fever, and yet these jerseys are not out there. That it just boggles my mind.
So I agree with you. There's a few things I'll say there. I agree with you. The Fever won the WNBA draft in December. The draft lottery in December. Caitlin Clark, 2 months later in February, announced that she was going to the WNBA. The odds on her being picked one overall by the Fever at that point were probably 99.99999% it does not seem like it would have taken even a modicum of forethought in Nike circles to say, hey, how many blank Fever jerseys do we have? We might need to start ramping that up now. And maybe they did, and maybe it just takes months and months and months longer than it makes sense for you or I sitting here. I believe it takes longer to produce and create these jerseys. On the number thing, Scott, because I thought about that also, the number actually isn't a factor in the production of the blank jerseys.
Right.
It's a factor in the selling. And you'll see oftentimes, and it's true right now for everyone else that's not Caitlin Clark in the WNBA, if you want to get a Cameron Brink jersey, there's 0-0 placeholders essentially in the thing until she gets introduced and gets her own jersey. Caitlin was a rare case where... I think you're more apt to
get a Cameron Brink dress.
Very nice. Caitlin was a situation where Fanatics did sell some 22 jerseys because everybody kind of had a sense of what the number was going to be. But the number, her jersey number does not affect how many blank jerseys, blank blue and black and red Fever jerseys that Nike creates. And it happened with Messi last year, Scott. It wasn't Nike, it was Adidas, but same exact thing. Messi comes to Inter Miami after months of reporting that he was maybe going to come to Inter Miami. And at that point, the jerseys weren't shipping until mid-October, which is the end of the MLS season, because of Adidas's manufacturing times. I think the fan in me and the business journalist in me is shocked that given this much lead time, we can't get product to the masses faster on the jersey side. But I think one of the other pieces of this is that of all the things Nike does business-wise, the creation and selling of WNBA jerseys is a very low priority, right? It's one of the reasons why a lot of these companies are handing over this manufacturing capacity and job to Fanatics. Nike has not done that with the NBA or WNBA jerseys, at least not yet. But there are companies that do specialize in this for whom this is a priority, and there's companies for whom it's not. And everything that Nike, the many, many billion dollar over company, is doing, getting blank Indiana Fever jerseys printed is just not that high on the priority list. And I think that's something that needs to be weighed as well.
Yeah, for this one, I would have made an exception. Now, as I tend to do, I drifted off for a moment. I know you won't care. I know you were saying really smart stuff, as you always do. But I was... We're trying to get into the triangulation game here on the program whenever possible. So I think I've got a pretty clever triangulation. You let me know if you agree or disagree. So we're going to try and do this. Let me try and triangulate here. So I mentioned like a little joke about Cameron Brink dress. Now, if you're watching the draft, you understand. And you pointed out something funny that I guess the WNBA had rules for attire for the draft a while back, which I did not know.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, but there seemed to be a dress code that would have precluded everybody a lot like of accounts. The cool stuff that women were wearing this week.
But that's the big takeaway here. I mean, one of our sister brands, WWD, Women's Wear Daily, they were on the red carpet, treating this as like sort of like this entertainment event, because it was. And the fashion certainly took center stage.
Yeah.
And so Caitlin Clark comes off. We found out afterwards she's dressed in Prada, right? She's dressed in Prada. No, Prada had never dressed an athlete before for a draft.
It's amazing.
Okay, great. Yeah. And by the way, the NBA draft, like we've been making stuff about the suits for all the time.
Red carpets for decades.
Yeah. What are they? Somebody, I remember Samaki Walker with the bowl hat and the red suit. That one sticks out, but I'm sure everybody else got attention. By the way, good for me remembering Samaki Walker.
Throwback.
Hell of a job. Yeah. Hell of a job by me on that one. All right. So we have Prada dressing Caitlin Clark. Now I'm thinking here, can I go? This is my true test of whether she's hit the big time. If I go down to Canal Street, right? This is like the home of knockoffs, right? Where you get Prado. You get a handbag that says Prado or something like that. Uh-huh. But if I go down to Canal Street, known for knockoffs, can I find, will there be hanging in the drawer, you know, in the doors? And you know the shops, you know, if New Yorkers all know what I'm talking about here. Handbags are out on there. Will there be a Caitlin Clark jersey hanging on Canal Street with name spelled correctly, you know, maybe 22, a little askew, whatever. But if I, if my little son or little daughter is begging for a Caitlin Clark jersey and I can't get one on Fanatics and I can't go to whatever sporting goods store and get it and they don't have it at the NBA store and I'm out of luck, can I go to Canal Street right now? And because I know there's going to be Messi. I know that's going to, yeah. I know there's going to be Mbappe. I know that stuff's going to be there. Can I find a, give me the betting man here, Evan Novi-Wins. Can I find a Caitlin Clark jersey on Canal Street?
I think the answer is no.
No.
At least not yet. Okay. But you can almost certainly get a Caitlin Clark jersey online from a unlicensed place, probably in China.
From China, yeah.
Get delivered very quickly. Mm-hmm. And this is what people are going to do.
I want to do a, can I do my public service announcement here? Yeah. Okay, if you do, now I'm not saying I've ever done this, and I'm also not saying that I have a whole bunch of NHL jerseys for my focus group of one when he was younger, and I'm certainly not saying that I took a silver pen and signed them, well, like, and told him that the players signed them. So I'm not I'm not going to say that my son will grow up thinking he's got a treasure trove of signed jerseys, and that people, like, if they get authenticated, they're going to laugh at him and go, "What are you
Does
doing?"
Jackson, listen to the pod yeah. ever?
No. In fairness, I did take the step of at least calling up the player's signature to try and copy it. So in fairness,
I don't know if that's better or worse, Scott.
I don't know. Well, anyway, he's got a bunch of, let's just say, NHL jerseys that might have come from some of those sites, but they're like $20, dude. And I signed them and I told him the player signed it. He's very happy with his Patrick Kane Blackhawks jersey, just so you know. but what my public service announcement is, when you're paying for this on the web, please do not use your regular credit card. Mm. Get a Visa card, put the exact price money on the card, like a gift card, and utilize that. That's my public service announcement. Should you want to try it, I'm not saying I did.
Very nice. Yeah. If you're going to buy an unlicensed jersey, this is Scott's tips.
Well, I'm just saying from China, like, you don't want your credit card floating around.
Gotcha.
The world there. So just do it in the gift card way, where the exact amount of the purchase is on the gift card. Everybody's happy. The jersey arrives. The stitching may not be perfect. But I will tell you, focus group of one is very happy with his signed jerseys.
Something else you should not do, Scott. You should not bet on basketball if you are a NBA player. John Paige Porter, the NBA journeyman, who has, I don't believe, was held out of games under suspicion of suspicious betting activity on markets around his games, formally banned by the NBA. I was at Adam Silver's press conference last week when he said this is the cardinal sin, is his words, the cardinal sin of basketball is players who are betting on games that they're playing in. And then the NBA comes out today on Wednesday and says that Porter disclosed confidential information to bettors. He limited his participation in at least one game while he was on the Raptors, and he bet on G League games that he was playing in. All of that comes together for a gambling ban. This is, in some ways, this is the thing that so many people were worried about as sports betting gets more proliferated around the country, and leagues like the NBA embrace the money associated with it in a more real way. Everyone has always talked about there's going to be big scandals. There's going to be players that are caught doing X or Y.
We'll see what the ramifications are here.
I'm very curious to see if this gets washed out of the news cycle, or if everyone's fears manifest themselves in some way, which is some long-term actual business ramification for the league, for its partners. Obviously, there's ramifications for Jonte. That seems clear. But this has been the thing that everybody knew was coming, was kind of waiting for, to see what the market was, how things were going to react. And we're going to find out here with Jonte.
Do you buy the arguments that because of the sunlight, we know about this, that if there was no legal betting here, FanDuel or DraftKings, if that didn't exist, that he would be making these bets illegally and we may not know about it. But now because he did, we find out about it. We knew.
To a degree, yeah. I mean, he was betting, we know, at FanDuel. Maybe there's other books there.
Do you use that in your marketing if you're FanDuel?
There's nothing to say that Jonte Porter couldn't have just done this offshore, where the sunlight would have been way smaller. I'm sure there are NBA players that are betting on games they're involved in, just not at FanDuel and in places where it's a little bit harder to detect. So, I think there's definitely true that in a lot of ways, we're going to find out about things that we might not have found out about 15 years ago just because of the way the regulation happens. But it's not like the black market is gone. It's not. So we're going to catch certainly the most careless or the least savvy of the people who are breaking these rules. But in the long term, I don't see a way where this is good news for anyone in the ecosystem, outside of the fact maybe that it will help desensitize the public for the next time, the next Jonte Porter, whether it's a basketball player or someone else.
Now, you were probably thinking nothing. You didn't like my comment at all. Like, no smirk, no smile at all.
Which one?
Like, so you were thinking, I could tell you, I didn't think you really processed it. That, like, we have all this marketing battle, right? I see it on New Jersey Transit. Everywhere you look, it's all the spend, DraftKings versus FanDuel. Like, how do you separate yourself? FanDuel can now say it's what the pros use.
It's what the pros use.
I knew you would like it. That's why I knew you didn't hear me.
The insiders use, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I knew you'd like it. The sharpest of bettors. I'm like, he's not paying attention. Yeah, speaking of, by the way, things that, like what you say, not finding out about stuff, you did find out a little more about the Super League of college football. And talk about people just with a ravenous appetite. Not surprising that you got a hold of the investor deck for the proposed Super League. And you found out a few things, and people were really interested mostly about, hey, where's my team and who are they going to play against?
Yeah, we published a huge story with all this detail, and the thing that people latched onto obviously
my team?
Was
my team?
In the seven divisions, who gets divvied up where. Our colleague Daniel Libet and I got a look at dated February 2024 deck that this group, the College Sports Tomorrow, which is a collection of prominent college sports names, prominent sports business executives, prominent sports team owners, an early version of a deck that they were floating around about this idea of college football is broken and how do we fix it? Here's a possibility. And this is a two-tiered league system for all 135 some odd FBS schools, a permanent 70 schools in a super league, a rotating set of schools from the bottom to the top with promotion and relegation to round out the rest of that top league. And a process by which you can see in the deck the way in which some very smart and very connected people in professional sports are trying to figure out in somewhat of a blank slate how you structure a global football league with 153 teams in it, right? And that's not easy to do. You can see in there some NIL salary cap, some transfer portal team that is getting player pays team that's losing player. There's a lot of interesting NIL floors. There's spending in there. There's trying to clean up the transfer portal. It is an attempt, and we can get into all the reasons why it's not going to happen anytime soon, but it is an attempt at least to look at what some kind of unified single structure for college football would be, where there is one entity and there is one union or group representing players, and they collectively bargain against each other in a unified, codified way.
If the NHL can get itself to in the small time frame, like within a month, like, yeah, let's do this. We need to do it. Like, things are getting really bad and
yeah,
we need to do this. And well, we have 4 weeks to make it go. I believe something here can happen, but so this is just planting a flag. We all know the change is coming in.
Agreed.
Yeah. In college sports, major college sports, revenue for producing college sports, particularly football, you pull it out. Nobody knows where it's going, but you're starting to get hints of where the power brokers of the industry at least think it might go. So
yeah, good enough. And there are some power brokers that are not involved here, right? Some very notable ones. It sounds like from the Athletic's reporting that Greg Sankey, who's the commissioner of the SEC, and Tony Petitti, who's the commissioner of the Big Ten, didn't meet with this group.
Surprise!
When they tried. And then another big power broker that who knows, but ESPN is, as you and I talk about a lot, Scott, is the, I would argue, the kingmaker right
the
now.
The central figure
college
in college football.
Football.
Yeah.
And you are not going to get anything like this done, in my opinion, without ESPN signing off on it. And ESPN just announced a 6-year extension with the college football playoff. ESPN has deals with a number of these big conferences that run through at least 2031, if not longer. It's going to be a while. Even if this had broad support, it would be a while before this starts. But
you
there
mean
are
to say
definitely
ION,
some.
ION and True TV can't get this done. Is that what you're saying? Is that, I mean, so now that they're big players
Alabama,
in sports?
Alabama, Georgia, and Florida,
okay.
That's for sure.
Right. Just checking. All right. So I don't have to remember that still just sticks to the NWSL season and March Madness. Okay, good
but
to
yes,
know.
But yes, I think you're right in the end that this is a trial balloon. This is an early framework of very smart people that are actually thinking about what this could look like. And we'll see it ends up being a runaway of the Big Ten and the SEC, as some people predict, or if there is room for some people to come in and restructure the whole thing in a way that is more inclusive of everybody. And Scott, you and I will be talking about that as it happens here on the show. You can find Scott on Twitter.
I had a joke to finish with.
Go ahead.
I can sense you were picking up steam going down a ramp. I'm like, whoa. a lot of these people listen to the podcast. We know that. Can we in the future, rather than just stamping it confidential, can we just add a little then, like, confidential except for leaking to Sportico? Can we just have that? Is that a big deal?
I'm in favor of that.
Just come on. You're going to get it anyway. So just let's put it on the document itself so that when we report it, we can say, look, this is what it was meant to be.
Always happy for
now,
that.
Now close the show.
He is Scott Soshnick. You can find him on Twitter at Soshnick. I am Eben Novi Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.
Left you alone today.